Hello and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor for McLean's Magazine.
We're almost a month into the election campaign, and the focus is starting to turn from the Mike Duffy trial to the struggling economy. The Liberals have thrown us a curveball by openly calling for deficits, while the NDP and Conservatives are both promising balanced budgets. We hear from Liberal Deputy Leader Ralph Goodale and get reaction from NDP Leader Thomas Mulcair.
Does the Canadian economy really need stimulus spending and deficits right now? Or would we be better served with the confidence of having numbers in the black? We try to clear the air by speaking with a former Deputy Minister of Finance.
What happened to politics? It's a question being asked by former Liberal leader Bob Rae in a new book. Bob Rae is here to discuss his book and speak about the problems he sees in politics today.
And the McLean's panel weighs in on Trudeau's deficit gamble, the latest polling numbers, and how the campaign is going as we approach the one-month mark.
For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill.
How could you not have read so many portions of your emails?
What exactly were you uncomfortable with?
This week, the trial for Senator Mike Duffy wrapped up for its summer segment, with many questions still lingering about who knew of the secret $90,000 deal between Nigel Wright and Senator Duffy. The trial won't resume until November 18th. But once the court case was put on pause, it was like someone flicked a switch. The attention of voters and the national media turned back to the campaign trail, where the economy was quickly becoming the hot topic. On Thursday, Liberal leader Justin Trudeau made a big gamble in this election campaign. He embraced the idea of deficit spending. It's not a normal campaign strategy from the Grits, who were proud to slay the deficit back in the 90s. After announcing he would double infrastructure funding over 10 years to $125 billion, Trudeau defended his bold stance.
Our economy needs investment in order to create growth. Our plan features 3 years of historic involvement in the investment in the Canadian economy. That growth will eliminate the Harper deficit, and we will balance the budget in 2019. Now, Harper has us in recession and in deficit right now because he has been unable to grow the economy over the past years. Mr. Mulcair seems to want to agree with him and continue to not invest in the economy and even make cuts. We know that Canadians should be betting on their future and investing in the future, and that's exactly what our plan will do.
The Liberals are predicting they'll have deficits of up to $10 billion for those 3 years. This may leave some voters scratching their heads. 20 years ago, it was the Liberals who made it their mission to slay the deficit. To talk about all this, McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes caught up with Ralph Goodale, a key player on Trudeau's economic policy team. Goodale was waiting for a flight in Toronto's Pearson Airport, and John started out by asking him why deficits are okay now when balancing the books was so important to them in the 90s.
Well, if you remember the circumstances we were facing back then, we quite literally had international agencies keeping a close watch on Canada because the fiscal situation was so dire. We had a debt to GDP ratio that was very close to 70%. About 33 or 34 cents out of every federal dollar was going to pay interest charges on the debt. The annual deficit was in the neighborhood of $40 billion a year. And the world's financial media were talking about Canada back then in very dire terms, saying that we were a candidate for honorary membership in the third world. So obviously, major initiatives were required to put that ship aright, or Canada would have faced a very severe loss of its fiscal sovereignty.
Hmm. That's not the case now. You're saying.
Well, the situation now is a different one because the debt ratio is much lower, and the important thing is to get this economy rolling. We've had eight pretty pathetic years under Mr. Harper. We've had the worst growth record in the past 80 years under his prime ministership. We've suffered not one but two recessions, and the number of of unemployed Canadians today is 160,000 more than when he came into office. And you've got a declining participation rate in the labor market. So the challenge now is how do you get economic growth?
It reminds me of the old mantra from the Liberal Party that, you know, you run from the left and govern from the right. Is that what we're seeing here, a sort of a reversion to a philosophy of campaigning that's best to campaign on a kind of expansionist theme because that's it makes people feel better about the country?
Quite frankly, we're campaigning on the theme that I think best fits the country's circumstances. We have had a pretty dismal economic period where growth has been sluggish and perhaps for the last 5 months at least, and maybe the last 6 months, non-existent, an economy that was actually shrinking. There needs to be a plan to get the country out of the mess it's in, and that's what Mr. Trudeau's plan is designed to do. It's investments in jobs and growth, and those investments will have the additional benefit of creating the durable foundation 2 years down the road to balance the books. And in the meantime, we're going to have every year of this program a declining debt to GDP ratio.
That was Liberal Ralph Goodale, a former federal finance minister, defending Justin Trudeau's plan to run deficits.
So the Liberals stand alone on this commitment to deficits. The NDP and the Conservatives are both promising to balance the books no matter what. Conservative leader Stephen Harper immediately took aim at the Grits, saying Justin Trudeau has no clue what he's talking about. Later, Harper mocked the Liberal plan at a campaign rally in Hamilton.
Justin Trudeau says he doesn't have to explain how he will pay for his promises. Once again, tens of billions of dollars of new spending because, as he famously announced, the budget will balance itself. Do budgets balance themselves in Hamilton region here? Well, actually, friends, let's be fair. Justin is now changing his tune. He now says today he will run a deficit, a modest deficit. I guess it turns out the budget doesn't balance itself after all. But he'll run a modest deficit, a tiny deficit. So small you can hardly see the deficit. That's what he says. A modest deficit, and only for 3 years. Only for, three deficits. Three modest little deficits. And maybe $10 billion each, modest $10 billion deficit to start with.
The New Democrats are also scoffing at Trudeau's plan. Maclean's political editor Paul Wells caught up with NDP leader Tom Mulcair, who is enjoying a consistent lead in the polls. Speaking at a school gym after a campaign event in Brantford, the two started off the interview by discussing the focus politicians have placed on campaigning in Ontario.
And let's start at the National Assembly. Quebecers have a kind of a sense that they know Ontario and they really don't. They refer to Canadians from everywhere else as les Ontariens. In eight years in federal politics and 3 years as a leader, what have you learned anything about? Have you been surprised by Ontario?
I've been surprised by the number of different places I've learned about. But when I'm here, and this is my sixth visit here, in this town, in Brantford, with LaFerrière. So one of the things that we've been sensing is that the change, because everybody says, well, this is a blue area, but there is such a thing as blue-orange switching, and this is what we're sensing, is that people in the farming communities know that we're standing up strongly in favor of supply management. They know that when we're talking about jobs, we look at the types of jobs being created, they're part-time, precarious jobs. They know that we have a plan to kickstart the economy, to give a hand to the small and medium-sized businesses that are the ones creating jobs, create more than 80% of the jobs in Canada now. They're reacting well to that. And they know that we've got a reputation and a track record of being good administrators. And they like that too, you know?
Okay. Today, Thursday, Justin Trudeau threw what I believe he intended to be a curveball, which is he's going to run 3 years worth of deficits if he's elected.
Yeah.
And essentially says you're too much of a stick in the mud to do likewise.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
that I've been fighting that approach of Mr. Harper's for a long time. He's always taken the approach that we should live for today and let tomorrow take care of itself. But when I was the Minister of the Environment, I brought in overarching sustainable development legislation, and I'm tired of seeing governments leave these massive social and economic and environmental debts on the backs of future generations. And I brought in that legislation in Quebec precisely so that we would start codifying what we had as obligations to future generations. And for me, this is an easy one. There's tough choices that always have to be made in any government, but if your priorities are clear, then you're going to get the choices right. I think that doing the right thing is looking at Stephen Harper's choices and saying, okay, he's done a certain number of things that we're not going to do the same way. And the question that I get that I have to be very posed in my response is, well, if you're going to do anything new, then you have to have new taxes. And I always say, that assumes that I'm going to do everything that Stephen Harper is doing and then other stuff. A bunch of stuff that he's doing that I'm not going to do the same. And I gave some examples of that at the one where I bumped into you today and shook your hand.
Yes.
As I was going around the room.
That's always unnerving. Probably more for the candidate. I do want to ask about the tempo of the campaign. Is this the campaign that we're going to be seeing more or less until the home stretch, or do things change next week after Labor Day?
My campaign started almost exactly 4 years ago because I launched my leadership campaign in the end of the summer, early fall, just in my case, early fall of 11. Jack left us just over 4 years ago, and you know what happened. So that was 6 months of the most intense work and most demanding thing you could think of. I think that's the easiest way of summarizing it, is that this has been going for 4 years now. And I like the pace of this campaign. We're up early, we do long days, we meet people. Sometimes some of the crew was a bit surprised. Yesterday we did some whistle stops that were just supposed to be photo ops, but the word gets out, and we don't blast it, we don't send a notice, but people just show up. It started during our own tour before the official one, in places like what? Where was it? Something of Fools?
Sarnia.
Yeah, that was in Sarnia.
Yeah.
So we're on our way in, and somebody says, the place is already packed. Fire code. What do you mean? There were 450 people in Perth, in a park, in something called the Crystal Palace, and some of the old-timers who had been around and working in the party 40, 50 years as volunteers, they were saying to me, listen, Tommy Douglas came here. Ed Broadbent came here. We had big meetings. 16, 18 people, 20 people. We had 450 people on a hot Friday afternoon. It was the Friday of the first week of the campaign, and people were excited. They sensed that something's happening. So during that trip, which was not even the official one, we were already sensing, okay, something's happening. And I've been at this for a while, something's happening. And we have been getting, and Catherine sees this a lot, people coming up to us and saying, I used to vote Liberal. I'm voting for you this time.
Let's pause there let's stop there because you've got real stuff to do,
yes,
too.
Thank you. But I'm excited. You can add that.
That was NDP leader Tom Mulcair speaking with Maclean's political editor, Paul Wells.
Now, before we go to break, we'd like to let you know this coming week, Maclean's magazine will be releasing a special election issue. This will be big. The whole Maclean's Ottawa Bureau is involved, bringing you stories from the campaign trail and in-depth analysis. The Maclean's team is also going to probe the NDP's unprecedented position in the polls and bring you some exclusive new numbers. It's an election issue of Maclean's you don't want to miss, so be sure to head to the newsstands next week.
Still to come on the show, we speak with a former Deputy Minister of Finance about the pros and cons of deficits and surpluses during this economic slowdown. We speak with former Liberal leader Bob Rae about what's wrong with politics. And the Maclean's panel discusses the grit deficit gamble and the first month of the campaign.
Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wary, Associate Editor for Maclean's Magazine.
Coming up on the show, former Liberal leader Bob Rae is here to speak about his new book, What Happened to Politics? And the Maclean's panel discusses Liberal deficits, the latest polling, and the first month of the campaign. But first,
the election heated up this week after Liberal leader Justin Trudeau took the unusual step of campaigning on deficits while his opponents promised to balance the books. It's a move that has sparked fierce debate amongst the parties as they try to battle it out for your vote. Basically, it's deficits versus balance. On that note, the first quarter results are in, and the fiscal monitor from the Department of Finance shows a $5 billion surplus for the government. Now that's for the period between April and June. Conservative leader Stephen Harper is pointing to the numbers to argue that his economic plan is working. But it should be pointed out that the figures are not reflective of the year as a whole, or more specifically, the downturn we've seen since June.
Now, aside from all of that, we want to try and clear some of the air over this deficit debate. I was able to reach Scott Clark, who is president of C.S. Clark Consulting. Now, before taking on that role, Clark actually served as a public servant in the Department of Finance for more than two decades. Between 1978 and 2000, he worked with every federal finance minister and finished off in the role as Deputy Minister of Finance. I was able to reach Clark on the phone. I guess we'll start off by just taking a look at the current state of the economy. I mean, you listen to the political parties speaking about it and you know, you'll hear from one side things are going great and you'll hear from the other side that things are terrible. In your eyes, what is the current state of the economy? How are we faring right now?
If you put the state of the economy in a little bit longer perspective than simply the first 6 months of 2015, because if you go back to 2010, the economy has been underperforming its potential in every year. And then we have the situation now of 2015, which is really quite peculiar, because we've had a slowdown in the first quarter. There's talk of a further negative decline or another decline in output in the second quarter, and we'll know whether that is true next Tuesday, September the 1st. And so this is partly attributed to what's been happening with oil prices and the oil and gas sector. On the other hand, the U.S., our partner to the south, as we saw just recently, their numbers are very good. They've had growth at 3.7%. So there's something going on in Canada that isn't going on in the U.S., there's something happening here which is slowing the growth for 2015, and we've seen recently the Bank of Canada say that they expect growth to be almost half of what was forecast in Mr. Oliver's April budget. So we've been underperforming for a number of years, and we're now underperforming, and I expect that we will continue to underperform.
So basically, we're not in a great position right now, but this is kind of modest compared to what we saw in 2008 and 2009.
Oh, yes. We're not. We talked about a technical recession, but I mean, I don't think 2015 we're going to have a output for the year, GDP for the year is not going to decline. But I think we're going to have a very dismal growth performance for the year, much poorer than what was expected only a few months ago. So we're kind of treading water and looking for some way to get this economy reinvigorated.
A lot of political parties are coming out speaking of deficits or balancing the books, and we want to try and take the politics away from this. And let's just look at the pros and cons of each. What are the pros and cons of running a deficit right now, and what are the pros and cons of balancing the books at this time?
Okay, let's talk about running a deficit. I think it's fair to say that the consensus among economists would be when the economy slows, you allow the budget balance to go into deficit, right? You have higher unemployment, your unemployment insurance benefits go up. You know, there's a lot of automatic stabilizers that at work that would generate a higher deficit or a smaller surplus. And that's automatic. But point two is that economists would also say that in a situation where you are underperforming your potential, then this is a good time for the government to act, right? Not to spend money frivolously, but this is a good time for the government to act to invest. A deficit that's driven by investment in the future, that's the kind of deficit that economists would say is a good deficit. And that's the kind of the debt that would result is also good debt, because you're investing in the future potential of the economy. And today, interest rates are very low, and therefore, that's a good thing to do.
Okay, so you've definitely laid out the pros of deficits, but there has to be at least a school of thought that there is a pro to balancing the books. What would be the benefit there? Is it paying off the debt? Is it fiscal restraint? What are some of the benefits that could go along with that?
I think that there may be a benefit in the sense that investors or financial markets see you as a good place to be, right? Because you have a good, you have a budget balance, you have low debt burdens, you've got control of the situation, and therefore the rating agencies and everybody gives you, the AAA rating. There is also, I think, a school of thought that might say that, running deficits really don't have an impact on economic growth because people look at the deficit and say, oh, my goodness, I'm going to raise taxes in the future. And therefore, they kind of begin to act in a way that it reflects their expectation that somehow the government will raise taxes on them in the future. That's a theory. It's never been one that's actually worked out in reality, but that is a school of thought, as you put it.
Regardless of whether you're for or against a deficit or a balanced book, how much would a deficit or a surplus really matter to our economy right now if we were, let's say, $10 billion below or $10 billion above?
It wouldn't matter one iota.
Why is that?
Because it's so small. And so it's really a tiny number, $10 billion, right? If you look at $10 billion in terms of a $2 trillion economy, as I said, you would have either a surplus of 0.5% of GDP or a deficit of 0.5% of GDP. Your debt ratio would go down, certainly if you had a surplus, but let's look at it. If you had a deficit of 0.5% of GDP, the overall debt burden of the federal government would continue to fall. And in terms of its impact on the economy, it's so small, it's probably not going to have that much impact.
That was Scott Clark, a former Deputy Minister of Finance, discussing the debate of deficits versus balanced books.
Still to come, former Liberal leader Bob Rae talks about his new book, What Happened to Politics? And we hear from the Maclean's panel.
Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
And I'm Aaron Wherry, Associate Editor for Maclean's Magazine.
Still to come on the show, the Maclean's panel weighs in on the Liberal deficit gamble, the latest election polling, and how the parties have fared in the first month of the campaign. But first,
What Happened to Politics? That's the title of a new book by Bob Rae, former federal Liberal leader and former NDP Premier of Ontario. Rae was first elected in 1978, but in 2013 he called it quits as a politician. He has now penned a critique of how politics in Canada has changed. I was able to reach Rae by phone to ask him about his book. So, Bob, you cover a lot of territory in the book, from the way politics works to some sort of concrete policy areas. But I guess if it's possible, how would you sum up your basic concern about the way politics are done right now?
I think the concern that I really have is that it's hard for both because of the way Parliament is operating at the moment and the way elections operate. It's really hard for there to be a serious discussion, engagement on matters of substance. And I think you can see it in Parliament just because of the way it's degenerated, and you can see it in the election campaigns and in politics generally because of the way in which the parties present things to the public. It's got less to do with substance and a lot more to do with just style.
It's always dangerous to invoke a golden age or say that things were perfect in the past, but do you think things were better in that regard in terms of substantive discussion? Do you think things were better at some point?
Well, I think there were times when it was more possible to have that kind of a discussion. I think that you're right about there not being a golden age. In fact, in some ways, it requires a unique quality in terms of leadership and also the way in which issues can sometimes come together clearly so that you can see that an election campaign is actually about something. Bigger than just, attack ads and people having to run at each other and making a promise a day, which is, more or less the pattern to which, we've all become used to and almost become insensitive to because it's just, we see it happening all around us. I do think that the media culture right now is contributing to it, and it's pretty hard to talk about how the politics is presented without saying that you know, it is partly a function of the way political parties are presenting things. It's also partly a way in which the media sort of encouraged that to happen.
How much did this worry you when you were still in politics, and how much of it is reflecting back and being able to look at things from the outside?
Well, I was always aware of it, and certainly when I became interim leader of the party, of the Liberal Party, in 2011, I made a point of saying to the caucus that, you know, I wanted to try to change the way, you know, the House worked, because I thought a lot of it was just too stagey. I mean, obviously, sitting back in the third party was a little difficult to do much, but I never read questions, always, and also tried to engage a couple of issues that really concerned me: mental health, mental illness, and Aboriginal issues, which have always been a real concern of mine. Even though those issues might not be sort of, you know, top of mind of, you know, well, you know, this is what it is, but. I think I felt in the age of the permanent campaign that the way I wanted to engage with people and engage with issues was just increasingly difficult.
How the permanent campaign is something that does seem to have developed. Was it demonstrably different 20, 30 years ago? Was there a point when people stopped, you know, politicking, or was it just less intense?
Well, I think the fact that the House wasn't televised, did mean that I think in the eyes of most people there was a distinction between, you know, what happened in the campaign and governing, but I think that as you know, politics and marketing came much more closely allied, I think that what's happened is that governing has in itself become a branch of marketing. You know, I mean, it's not as if that wasn't true 30 years ago. Sure, I mean, there were government ads. You know, did the government, you know, use advertising? And that was certainly my experience both with you know, the government of the day federally, as well as you know, Mr. Davis in Ontario. I mean, you may forget or not be aware of that old jingle, "Preserve it, conserve it," which the progressive conservatives put out like 6 months before the election campaign. I mean, everybody knew what they were doing, but still, it was pretty clear this was very staged marketing. But still, there was this difference between governing and campaigning, and now there's no such distinction. I mean, it's in government press releases, it's the Harper government. It's not the government of Canada or the Canadian government. It's question period is used as a way of reinforcing messages. People are given deliberate messages to say, here's the message, here's what you have to repeat over and over again. No matter what they ask you, and they'll give the same answer, and eventually, you know, you'll drum it into Canadians' heads that this is what the choices are. I think that's been done much more systematically in my time than I've seen it done in other governments. I've never seen anything quite taken to the extent and the degree to which it's been taken recently.
When you look at how the leaders are campaigning right now, is it demonstrably different from how you campaigned as NDP leader?
No. I mean, it's a little more focused. I think, frankly, that people have gotten better at it in terms of, you know, there's less... I mean, it's very tight. It's much more tightly controlled than it used to be. I mean, you know, I think I probably ran the last campaign where, you know, there were lots of scrums and there were lots of opportunities for exchanges. There was a lot more sort of open pre-events. You did a lot more just, you know, mainstreaming where you weren't quite sure who was going to say what or what individual was going to come up and say what. And events are now much more tightly controlled than I've ever seen them. That is just a reality. I mean, it may be you can say, well, they're just doing it better than you ever did, and you sort of say, well, it may be, but it also is a way of saying that the public has much less access to the process now than they certainly did when I was campaigning as leader, and when I watched other people campaigning in the 60s and 70s.
Would there be an advantage to be gained from changing the way things are? Like, would the public reward change?
I think ultimately the public will. I think when you do what's right and what's good policy, and recognize that A lot of people of talent are being driven out of politics. A lot of people with good ideas are getting turned off the political process. The electorate is less engaged than it's ever been. I don't know anybody who can look at the situation and say, oh, there's nothing to worry about. There's no problem. There's no change and nothing. Just life just goes on and don't think about it. I think that's something that we have to, you know, be much more aware of as we look at life and look at how the world around us is changing.
Is there any one change you would make to things to improve things? Like, is there something, you know, you would desperately want changed?
Well, there's a whole bunch. I mean, as you can tell from what I've said and also from the book, I mean, there's a number of proposals I make about how Parliament needs to change. I think the big issue now during an election campaign is it's really important for issues to come to the forefront and for there to be a much greater opportunity for the public to actually question leaders. And one of the ways of doing this is for the public, frankly, and the media to say to the political parties, this is how it's going to work. We're not going to cover you if you do X, Y, and Z. And if you refuse to participate in debates, then we won't watch what you say. I mean, the way things work right now is the media is going along with the parties who say, no, this is how it's done, and here are the rules of the game. You get to talk to us once a day, if you're lucky, and they'll take five questions, or I'll get to do this or that. And it to me, it's just like saying, well, if everybody just goes along with this, then of course it will continue. But it's only when people say, actually, no, this is not how elections should happen, and we're insisting on new rules of the game for how elections will happen. And I don't think that's totally pie in the sky. I think it's just a question of people demonstrating a little bit of fiber and showing that they're just not going to just keep going along with the gag, because right now it is pretty much a gag.
That was former federal Liberal leader Bob Rae discussing his new book, What Happened to Politics.
Coming up after the break, we hear from the McLean's panel about the first month of the campaign and the Liberal gamble on deficit spending. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill.
It's now time for the McLean's panel. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. I'm joined, as always, by the co-host, McLean's Associate Editor, Aaron Wary, and McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief, John Geddes. Thanks very much for being here, guys. All right, so we have this big Liberal gamble. They're basically embracing deficits while the NDP and the Conservatives are promising balancing the books. So I guess, Aaron, we'll start with you. Were you taken aback when you heard this promise, and what do you think of the strategy?
I think I was a bit taken aback, not because it's inconceivable that anybody's going to run a deficit in those years, but just because balancing the budget has become such a totem of good governance that it seems like the thing you're not supposed to say or do. It'll be interesting to see now. It sort of sets up this kind of a discussion on a few fronts. One is sort of this meta discussion about whether or not you can concede that you're not going to balance the budget, whether you can do that and not be punished for it politically. And then the second more substantive argument then becomes, you know, do we need to balance the budget? And if we don't balance the budget, what are we going to spend the money on? You know, there's a real discussion to be had here about what the federal government is going to spend its money on over the next few years. And that to me is the more important discussion. But, you know, we're now going to have this kind of interesting discussion about whether or not a balanced budget is somehow an end in and of itself.
I'll go with the unimportant parts of the budget, the political things. There are three things that occur to me. One is, it's an old mantra in Liberal politics to run from the left, govern from the right. And this is running from the left, right? So that's the first thing. It follows a sort of a well-established Liberal playbook going way back to at least the 1970s, maybe earlier than that. There's also the more recent brand identification of the Liberals with fiscal probity. Paul Martin is the poster elder statesman for that policy or that way of governing. There's a sort of balance. Hey, bring out Paul Martin to remind people, hey, we're not crazy people, we'll manage books well, and then say, we're going to run deficits for a few years in the hopes that those things kind of balance each other out. I think that's quite shrewd. Some people said, well, that's a dissonance, that's a conflicting message. I'm not sure. I think there's a sort of a balancing that happens there. And then the third thing comes more to what Aaron was referring to is like, what are we really, not just we're talking about deficit spending, but deficit spending for what? And if what this does is allow Trudeau a way to bring people into his policy book, to say, to force people to think, wow, he's talking about spending deficits, or running deficits, what on, you know? If that's the next stage, then it could be a winner in that respect, that you kind of bring people to think about your infrastructure plan or your tax cutting plan, some of the things that make it hard for you to balance the books in the early years.
So we have Justin Trudeau trying to sell this. How difficult of a sell will this be? He's definitely set himself apart from the other two leaders, and it's a big move in that way. But trying to convince Canadians after hearing for so long that balancing the books is the goal that every government has to get to, will this be a tough sell for him on the campaign trail?
I think it depends on the success of what John's talking about, which is you've given yourself now more that you can promise. You can say, look at all these things I'm going to do. And whether that can counterbalance the idea of being in deficit. You know, for all the concern about whether or not the budget is balanced, I would defy anyone to explain comprehensively how we got this budget balanced. You know, in the last election, the Prime Minister was saying, we're going to return to balance. And people said, how? And he said, don't worry about it, we'll find inefficiencies. And there's been no sort of, except for little flare-ups here and there over, you know, veterans offices, there's been no real concern about how exactly we got back to balance. So, you know, it's not clear to me that the Liberals can make much of an argument against austerity. You know, they're trying to come at Mulcair and say, well, he's going to make cuts. But I don't know if people, I think people just think, oh, there's always stuff to cut in government, it won't affect me. But if the Liberals can change the argument to here's what we're going to spend the money on and we can do it basically reasonably, then maybe he's got a winning argument.
Interesting the way Aaron's framing it here, and I think it's the way a lot of people are framing this discussion as a Liberal NDP contrast. It's just fascinating. We've come to the point where the governing party, the Conservatives, a party that has identified itself to a large degree with the idea that getting rid of deficits is important, mind you, they've run a lot of deficits, but they've identified themselves with that goal, and yet the debate comes down to, well, let's look at the clash and the contrast between Mulcair and Trudeau. Harper almost looks like an outlier here, or like a third wheel in this whole thing, which is fascinating. If you'd said, you know, a few months ago, there'll be a debate over deficits in the campaign, and it won't focus on the Tories, it'll focus on the Liberals NDP, I don't think people would have thought that was plausible.
But at the same time, I think Stephen Harper's enjoying this. We saw him on the campaign trail yesterday, basically mocking Trudeau. Later, it was turned into a meme, but nonetheless, mocking this whole plan from the Liberals.
And something about that, Cormac, I mean, right now the polls are suggesting the Conservatives are running third, or at least that they're sort of neck and neck with the Liberals in second. And the suggestion here is that when Harper has a chance to go after Trudeau, as he does in this thing, he's very happy. Now, why would that be? Why wouldn't he be happier if he could find a way to go after Mulcair? Might be that he thinks the NDP votes are not gettable, right? That there aren't switchers in that NDP column. So even though the NDP is front-running, Harper still has to train his sights on Trudeau because that's where the potential leakage of Liberal support might be.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like Trudeau, there's been lots of concern about whether Trudeau is, you know, falling apart or the campaign isn't going anywhere. Maybe to his benefit, the discussion is at least about him right now. And Harper, meanwhile, doesn't seem to have really had a great. I think it'd be hard to say that the Prime Minister had a great month, had a great August, because
no,
I don't.
Terrible August.
It doesn't seem like they have much momentum. It doesn't seem like they've really set anything up. They haven't taken the Liberals off the field of play. The NDP is still strong. So the Prime Minister did seem a bit revved up last night, and I can imagine that he does see this as an opening, but it's not clear how much this can be exploited really by him.
All right, and you sort of got into the next area of discussion I wanted to get to, and that's the fact that we're hitting the 1 month mark in the campaign. How do you think it's been going so far for the leaders?
Well, I mean, as I just said, like I think the Conservatives, the Prime Minister is having a hard sell here at this point. I just don't know how much room he has left to grow and how much people are really interested in giving him another shot. I think Mulcair, I mean, you have to kind of side with the guy who's leading the polls. Tom Mulcair came in seemingly with a lead and he's maintained it. And he hasn't looked shaken yet. It doesn't look like anything that the Liberals or the Conservatives have done have necessarily taken him off his game or forced them to kind of scramble around. But I suspect that with Mulcair, the real test is now beginning, and that people are going to go, okay, well, let's be serious about this. Are these guys ready to govern? And as for Trudeau, it's kind of the feeling I had after the first debate, which was, well, he's still in the game. And for a guy who seemed like maybe he was falling out of the game, he's still there and he stayed in it. And so that, you know, that gives them that much more hope going into September, I think.
John, looking forward with 1 month down and some problems for the Conservatives, the NDP high up in the polls and the Liberals still in it, if there is going to be a shift that happens after Labor Day weekend and everyone goes back to work and school and life returns to semi-normalness moving forward, what shift do you see happening if there is one to come?
I'm going to avoid trying to predict the shift, but I will say at this point, both the Conservatives and the Liberals have to be looking at this and saying, we came into this race with the NDP cresting, right? The NDP was rising going into the early weeks of August. They both had to be hoping that that would stop, right? They both had to be hoping that at least to hold them. That hasn't stopped. The NDP had, by most accounts, been picking up, not dramatically, but picking up during the month of August. Liberals may also have picked up a little bit in Ontario. But there hasn't been a situation where either of the parties that were hoping to stop the NDP from keeping their momentum in the airport have managed it. So what needs to happen for one of those parties, I mean, if we just take the polls as a given right now that the NDP is in the lead, the question is, will they stay in the lead or not? So one of those two parties has to find a way to halt their progress. And how would that happen? Ontario is big for the Liberals right now. It's the bright spot for Justin Trudeau. He still looks very competitive in Ontario. So I would think the Ontario is where the Liberals would be looking to somehow turn things around, make it look like they could win this thing. Hard to see how that exactly would happen, but it's always hard in campaigns until something occurs to foresee it, right?
Aaron, homework over the next month for the campaigns on what they should do moving forward?
They should try to win the election. I think it would be good. I'm at this particular moment, I think I'm most interested to see how the Conservatives handle this. If they go another week or two and they haven't had an uptick, how do they respond to that? You know, what happens on the ground? What are, like, do people start kind of openly worrying about what's going on? What happened? There's been one poll, you know, a couple polls now that have suggested them and the Liberals kind of neck and neck for second. You know, if the Conservatives slip into third, I think the dynamic of this campaign suddenly becomes very different and people have to wrap their minds around it. So that's kind of, I think the Conservative Party, where they go now, I think is kind of what's most interesting to me.
And do you think the Duffy trial has helped with, I mean, not helped, but do you think the Duffy trial has sort of led to some of this pullback in confidence and trust in the Conservatives, or do you think that was building before
Absolutely.
That point?
Absolutely. At the point, the numbers I would look to are the numbers of people who want change, right? Which have been rising during the campaign. And I think that part of that is just a daily drumbeat of negative messaging about the current government and how it's handled itself. And when you're seeing that on TV day after day, even if you're not following every twist and turn of the trial, you're watching a thing that says, hey, this government behaved, you know, in at best a dubious way. Hey, that's a perfect fostering change kind of climate. People want change when that's the dynamic. Tories have to be very happy that trial's on hiatus now until November. I mean, it's they must be breathing an absolute sigh of relief that they get to campaign through September, October without that drumbeat coming day after day in the news.
Especially with the focus turning to the economy now, which is usually seen as a strong suit for Stephen Harper. Excellent. Thanks very much, guys. McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes, McLean's Associate Editor Aaron Wherry, and I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
That's it for this week's episode. Remember to check out the other podcasts from McLean's, The Thrill, our podcast on pop culture, and Bibliopod, our podcast about books.
But for more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.